It seems every time Ken Burns produces one of his epic multi-part documentaries, it jumpstarts a conversation. Baseball, the Civil War, jazz. People often stop what they're doing to see what Mr. Burns sees. His latest, produced with his collaborator Lynn Novick, is a 10-part series on the Vietnam War. Last night was episode one, and something caught our attention. The story of Ho Chi Minh. He was, of course, the leader of the North Vietnamese Communist forces during the war against the United States and America's allies in South Vietnam. But it turns out Ho had a much more complex relationship with the U.S., stretching back decades. The World's History guy Chris Wolfe has been digging in. And Chris, what did you find?
Well, let's start with the fact that he once lived here in Boston and New York City. He put to sea from Vietnam at the tender age of 21 to work as a cook on a steamship traveling around the world. More, I think, to see the world than out of desperation or poverty. He came from a middle-class family. And see the world he did. He lived in France. He lived in the UK, worked his passage over here, lived in New York and Boston.
Boston, I mean, what was he doing here?
Well, we don't know that much about it. He traveled back and forth under various names, so it's hard to keep track of. But we know for sure he worked at the Parker House Hotel here in Boston, where as a cook, he probably worked making such classics as the Boston cream pie and the Parker House roll, which were both invented at that establishment.
That's incredible.
Crazy to think.
Yeah, so what did he think about American politics? Was he as favorable to what he saw as he was to Parker House rolls?
Well, I think that's it's a really good point because, well, we don't know what he really thought about the nitty-gritty of, like, American party politics of the day. But for sure, he was a huge admirer of the American ideology, I want, for want of a better word, the idea of the revolutionary underdog people challenging imperial overlordship. You know, the founding myth of America and was still, like, hugely prevalent at the time was the idea that the people rose as one against a foreign tyrant, Great Britain, in America's case. And obviously, for a long time, this was a hugely potent symbol to colonial peoples around the world.
So if Ho Chi Minh embraced that American narrative, how did that affect his actions once he returned to Vietnam?
Well, actually, before he got back to Vietnam at the end of World War One, he was in Paris, ran into a lot of other Vietnamese nationalists, and they were inspired in particular by President Woodrow Wilson's 14 points, one of which centered on the idea of self-determination, that peoples of a right ought to be able to figure out who should rule them. So Ho Chi Minh and these other Vietnamese nationalists actually petitioned Woodrow Wilson at the Conference of Versailles, the peace conference after World War One, to try and get their country taken into consideration, but without success.
So Ho Chi Minh does return to Vietnam and launches the revolution when the Japanese occupied French Indochina during World War II. And I gather, again, he kind of turns to the U.S. for guidance.
Not just guidance, he's actually asking for arms and help. And the precursor of the CIA, the OSS, parachutes in a team to go check him out, basically, and check his bona fides. They decide, well, he's more of a nationalist than a communist. This is someone we can do business with. So there are follow-up teams with arms, ammunition, and trainers to show Ho Chi Minh's forces how to actually use these weapons and to use them with some effect against the Japanese.
How much did Ho Chi Minh talk about his kind of reliance on the United States and how much he was inspired by this country?
The opening words of the Declaration of Vietnamese Independence, which he read on September 2nd, 1945, as the Japanese Empire is crumbling in defeat. And he's quoting Thomas Jefferson, "All men are created equal. They are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." So there it is in black and white, a direct kind of appeal to the wider world, almost to say, look, this is part of a historic struggle against colonialism.
All right, so what about being a communist? I mean, some people saw him as more of a nationalist, less of a communist. Was he not sincere?
Well, there's a kind of a counterfactual argument here, Marco. People have taken it to the extreme to say that the U.S. somehow missed an opportunity to flip him because he was a nationalist first and a communist second, that somehow we could have avoided the Vietnam War. I think that's taking it a little bit too far, frankly. He was a committed communist from the 1920s. He was persecuted for it, yet stuck to his guns. So you can see that he was never going to be a natural ally for the U.S. in that part of the world. But that's not to say he ended his admiration and emulation of the founding fathers, because he and his top general, Vo Nguyen Giáp, closely modelled their war on George Washington's war against the British. Keep your army in being, avoid a catastrophic defeat, wear the enemy down, and eventually make it too expensive for your superior enemy to continue the war, break their will, as it were.
The World's History Guy, Chris Wolfe, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Marco.